Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Richard, when we read this article, the first thing that you said to me was, man, a week-long hike in Spain.
I know. As soon as I started reading this, the first line is, on a week-long hike in Spain, I thought, I have to finish this article. Whoever this guy is, I have to read this whole thing slowly.
It's written by a physician, Lloyd Sederer.
Lloyd must have had the luxury of some time in Europe.
That's right.
Last year, he said. A week-long hike in Spain.
Right. And so he wrote it, and this is an excerpt from his book, and so we'll include this excerpt in the show notes, but or a link to the excerpt in the show notes. But it's an excerpt from his book, Improving Mental Health, Four Secrets in Plain Sight. And so what he's talking about are four secrets to improving our health and mental health. And I really like some of the things that he's talking about here.
Right. Yeah, because it was on the walk. He said he walked 8 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And he said, it gave me a lot of time to think. And we're both envious of 8 hours a day of just walking and thinking and sorting it out. And he sorted it out on this walk.
I wonder if he was playing Pokemon Go when he went.
No.
In 8 hours of walking, that's a lot of eggs that you can hatch there, first of all. Second of all,
he probably had the good sense not to do that.
Oh, it would be tempting, though.
No, not in Spain. Do they have Pokemon in Spain?
Probably, no. I'm sure.
It's too bad if they would ruin a good walk.
Well, but I like how he calls them secrets also. Right. Instead of calling them laws or truths or anything like that, he calls them secrets.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about some of these. So the first one is that behavior serves a purpose.
Something we say all the time when we're working with teachers, pre-service and in-service teachers. We say behavior serves a purpose. Kids they don't misbehave. They behave to get their needs met.
Right. Okay. Whatever that need may be.
That's right. The first thing you have to understand, behavior serves a purpose.
Yep. And so it really, I mean, that secret, we'll put secret in quotations.
Yeah, because he calls secrets in plain sight.
Right. You know, so. I mean, it's very, of course we know that. We know that behaviors serve a purpose. Now, the second one is the power of attachment. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Now, what's fantastic is, because we've talked, each of these four things are things we've talked about.
Right.
And we've talked about them without even having read this book.
Right.
So, see.
Mm-hmm. And that's what he discovered. And what he did on this walk is he rediscovered these truths, these secrets. There's really nothing new here. Mm-hmm. But when you take the time to sit back, you say, oh, these are the really important things.
Yeah.
You know. And the first one is behavior serves a purpose. The second one is
the power of attachment.
And what we learned is that people who, if you want to live long and you want to be healthy, find a partner.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You have to have some connection with other people.
That's right.
Yeah.
Whether it's just a partner or family or extended family or friends, you need to be around other people. You need to be attached to others.
Absolutely. We are social creatures, so we have to be able to, we have to be connected to other people. There's a really interesting, and I always forget the guy's name. He's a YouTuber, and
I wouldn't know that.
You wouldn't. That's why I wasn't going to ask you. But
when I got to the rappers on word search, I was lost. I had to do a lot of guessing on that one. I don't know. I only know two rappers. Well, three now. But YouTubers would be as mysterious a group as rappers to me.
I have to admit that when you first said it, I thought that she said raptors.
No,
like
no.
Raptors, velociraptors.
No, raptors. I know.
Birds of prey.
Those are birds of prey. Yeah.
Yeah.
But rappers are.
There are times when
it's like Back to the Future. So the third one is
the.
This shouldn't derail you.
It did.
I mean, you talk about things that are like, where's that coming from?
But let me tell you what this non-rapper YouTuber
I'm not going to remember anything after your rapper comment. But he does a lot of like psychological discussions, and it's really good. He's now on YouTube. He now has his own channel on YouTube Red. Mm-hmm. But his first YouTube Red video was a free for everybody to watch, and it was on isolation. Uh-huh. And he talks about the impact of isolation on people. Mm-hmm. And it was a fascinating study, because he did sort of this informal experiment where he had these people sitting in a room, and there's this button, and a guy hits the button and it shocks him. Mm-hmm. And he's like, and it surprised him. And he was talking about how he could still feel it. And then almost as though he wasn't sure that it really shocked him, he hit it again and it shocked him again. And so they came in and talked to him about it, and he says, oh yeah, I'm never going to touch that again. He goes, I can still feel it going through me. And then they put him in a room by himself, mm-hmm. with nothing but the button.
Right.
Within 2 minutes, he pushed the button again.
Just to make sure.
And within 5 minutes, he had pushed it a second time. Mm-hmm. And within, just a few minutes of saying that he would never touch it again. Right. And when they interviewed him afterwards, he says, I don't know. I guess I was just so bored. I just...
Right.
And we as human beings, human mm-hmm. social creatures, we want to have these interactions. And so, when we think about things like the power of attachment, it is a very real phenomenon that we seek, and we have a drive to have these connections with other people because we, it's part of our biological makeup.
That's right. And no matter how bad things get,
right.
I always have these people in me. I can always go here, and we can go here, and we go here. It doesn't matter, because I can sit down and talk to my friends or mm-hmm. talk to my family, and things will get better.
Right.
So the power of attachment.
Mm-hmm. Now, the third thing is, as a rule, less is more.
I like this part.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about battlefield wounds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he said that for 2,000 years, it was clean it out with water and let mm-hmm. nature heal it. And then with the advent of gunpowder, it was a different kind of wound, and so they started treating them differently, and they put oil in them and said, mm-hmm. made it much worse, and until they ran out of oil,
right.
Which I love these little discoveries that we have by mistake. Mm-hmm.
They
ran out of oil, so they said, well, let's just use water, and so the wound started to heal faster.
Yeah.
Less is more. And the same goes with medicine, I think, psychology. We mm-hmm. always say, when we're training teachers, we always say, do the least intrusive intervention that you can. If just walking over to somebody will stop the behavior, then don't say anything. Okay. The least amount possible.
Right.
The law of parsimony.
Oh, you always have to throw some word out there.
Yeah, the law of parsimony. Do as little as possible to get the result that you want.
That is my motto for work.
It's not your motto for work.
I
you're driving this wagon
unparsimoniously.
Ride them hard and put them up wet is your philosophy when it comes to
work. It'll be good. So
we need to talk.
I need to
learn how to fish or something.
Something
than work.
The fourth secret mm-hmm. is that chronic stress and chronic inflammation is the enemy. And
now about that?
We have. And in fact, we have talked about it many times, especially when it comes to diet and nutrition and the things that that are causing stress in our body. Whether it's inflammation or it's stress from work or it's stress from relationships,
That's right.
Despite the fact that we are social creatures and we seek this attachment,
mm-hmm.
sometimes those relationships create stress and create other problems.
This whole notion of stress and depression, we used to, for years we thought that it was the serotonin transporter gene
right.
that was, because depression responds to serotonin reuptake inhibitors. And so we used to think it was serotonin. Now people are thinking maybe it's some kind of inflammation.
Right.
We know that stress,
mm-hmm.
trauma, can create depression
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
because it creates inflammation.
Right.
Okay. That's why cortisol is released, because it's an anti-inflammatory.
Right.
Okay. Now we're saying you can do this, you can create the same kind of inflammation with your diet.
Right.
And so we are going to be talking about this
Right.
We don't mean to talk too much about it.
Sometimes we do.
But we're going to be discussing this a lot in the next months and years.
And I think that, I won't get on the soapbox I often get on when it comes to some of this, because, you know, the mental health field, medically, it has been treated and managed in a way unlike any other branch of medicine. You know, most of the medications that we use in the mental health field were found accidental.
That's right.
Accidentally.
Yeah, that they work. Oh, gee, that worked.
It was a histamine, and we were giving it to these patients in the hospital, and look, they're not depressed anymore. So, hey, let's start making some more of these and call them antidepressants.
Right.
Same thing with antipsychotics. The same thing with, even stimulant medications. It was a nasal decongestant.
Right.
And so they said, look, when we give these kids this nasal decongestant, they start sitting down and focusing a little bit more. So let's start making some more of those.
They seem to calm down and pay attention.
And you couldn't imagine them functioning the same way in cardiology.
Physical medicine.
Yeah.
Let's take his heart out and see what happens.
Yeah.
Let's inject it with something and see if this works.
Yeah. And even if they find something accidentally in some of these other... They continue to research and they look for other things. And that's how we get medications that, you know, such a broad sort of collection of medications for these different physical ailments. But in mental health, again, we have... You know, well, that's the class of antidepressants, and there's a few subcategories, but really they're very similar.
And you're right. It's like the Wizard of Oz approach. We have to look behind the curtain. You know, we discover that the medication works, and so we assume causation based on medication effects, okay? And what people are beginning to do now, what professionals are beginning to do now, is they're looking behind the medication. Well, why does an SSRI work? You know, what's it really doing?
Right.
I remember years ago, probably 20 years ago, I still was at the University of Texas, and I wanted to delineate the why stimulant medications were effective with ADHD. Mm-hmm. You know, what is the pathway? Mm-hmm. And there was a guy in San Antonio, Steve Pliska, a psychiatrist in San Antonio. And he had just written a book on this topic. And so I said, oh, good, I'll be able to use that book. I opened the book, and he said, we don't know the pathophysiology of ADHD.
Right.
We don't know exactly what's happening. Mm-hmm. And I was absolutely shocked, because at that point, there had probably been 3,000 articles, research articles, written on ADHD. It's the one disorder that we knew the most about.
Right.
I said, well, let's explain the patho, and he said, we don't know the pathophysiology of ADHD. And if we didn't know it for that, we certainly weren't going to know it for anything else.
And today, there's probably 100 or 1,000 times more research articles, and we still don't know.
We still don't know where this medication, exactly where it goes and what it does.
Okay. Yeah.
And so, but we know that it works.
Right.
Okay, now, why does it work? Yeah. What's happening that would work?
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's, again, it makes the mental health field so much different than physical health, because when you think about cardiology, you know, we all know the little heartbeat that you see on an EKG.
Right.
Each of those points is identified.
Right.
And so you look at it and you can say, oh, this person has long QT. So there's a long space between the Q wave and the T wave. Mm-hmm. And so this is the treatment that you give for that. And it's, okay. So that makes sense, because this medication treats that issue.
Right.
We don't have any of that in any field, any area of mental health.
With the hundreds of psychotropic medications that there are, we don't have it for any of them.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's fascinating, and so, you know, I love what Dr. Sederer says here, that you know, it's important that we recognize that there may be other things to consider.
That's right.
Things that aren't necessarily measurable, and maybe that's why we're not able to measure some of these things. But because chronic stress and chronic inflammation and some of that stuff really is at the root of a lot of these issues.
And I love this whole, and I think inflammation is an excellent example.
Right.
You know, that okay, we know that stress causes inflammation, but what else causes inflammation?
Right.
And maybe it's maybe there is avenues here that we need to start pursuing.
Absolutely.
So I'm glad we are, and I'm glad to see him mention this.
Yes, absolutely. So, all right.
Nice well, article.
It
really
is.
Good. And I hope you enjoy, I'm sure you enjoyed your time in Spain,
not
Dr.
Sure.
S.
Yes. So, all right. Well, that is it for today.
Right.
So, until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.